Today's daf is Baba Batra Yud Chet. I want to go back and review some of the end of yesterday's daf because I'm not sure I explained it all well enough and correctly. So I want to go back and kind of make a run through again. Just to review, we're dealing with here the Mishnah, and we're going to see all the subsequent Mishnahs in this parak, which, like we had a sig in the beginning of Baba Batra, where they quoted all the Mishnayot later to kind of, as an answer to a question or to question people. What we're going to do now is you can look at the sheet I did. Okay, so you can see all these Tanaitic sources, which are basically our Mishnah, and then the following Mishnayot, are all coming to, first we're going to question the Lashon Rishon, which we saw yesterday, and then the Lashon Sheni of Abai and Rav's Machloket. Then they're going to question Abai, and then they're going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 questions on Rava from the upcoming Mishnayot. Okay, so we're going to go through various parts of the upcoming Mishnayot, use them all as ways to question Rava. What we have going on here is we have a slew of Mishnayot that all discuss, as Naomi said before class, which is we're discussing such a small area, right, whether you need 3 tefachim or how much space you need to separate between your item and the next guy's property, which is very, right, the next guy's item, right? If each of you have an item, it seems like a very strange discussion to be getting into such a small, obviously you're going to end up separating your stuff somewhat. But I think what the real discussion is really what happens in the Gemara, which is Abai and Rava, which gets back to the Machloka, which we'll see today, that we saw already between Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi about, is it the responsibility of the Mazik, Laharchik at this moment on Izak? Meaning, do you have to kind of foresee what might happen in the future that maybe he'll want to build something? Right? Remember, the Mishnah was talking about when the person's stuff existed already, the other neighbor's stuff existed, and how much you have to distance your item from his existing item. What Abai and Rav are discussing is, do you have to distance your stuff from his property in the event that he might want to build something, right? Whether it's dig a bore or something on his side, and therefore how much do you have to anticipate and not do, right, which is the concept that the mazik needs to be marchik at the tzmo, or maybe he doesn't. Ala nizak, the nizak, so if the guy already dug a bore there, so you distance your stuff from his bore, right? And it's all about how much rights do you have to the stuff on your own property, right? Now, there's a bunch of distinctions being made here, right, between, we saw yesterday, distinctions a little bit between the Machloket Rabbi Yossi and Rabbanan, the Machloket Abai and Rav, and how the details are different, right? Because in the case of, let's say, the Ilan and the Boar, which is where Rabbi Yossi and Rabbanan are arguing, the Ilan has to take a long time till the Shorashim actually grow and start damaging the guy's Boar. Whereas the case here is the damage is immediate. Let's say he's banging on the ground and that immediately causes damage. And that gets into the concept of what we call geri delay, his arrows, okay? Meaning your koch is my koch. If we've learned about grama. Now, grama is when I do something that then causes something else, which will eventually, right, cause you damage. That's like making, you know, planting a tree. Eventually, my roots are going to get to you, and that's an indirect way of damaging. Whereas if I throw an arrow, if I shoot an arrow at you, well, can you say that's indirect? Because I didn't touch you, it was my arrow that touched me. But obviously, it's coming from your koch, right? And that's the same as digging this bore, which my movement of digging there, or whatever I'm, you know, whatever the issue might be, the moisture is going to actually attack your, you know, or affect your property, in which case that's more direct damage. So these are all the broader issues going on, even though we're going to get into a lot of nitty-gritty here. So I want to go back. Okay, let's just review. There were 2 lashonot. Remember, in the first lashon, everybody agrees that if this, you can look back at the chart on the sheet, everybody agrees that sadeh asuya lebarot, you cannot, right? This is all the machloket. What if you want to dig a bore next to the border of your friend's property, even though he doesn't have a bore there? So everyone agrees that if it's a sadeh that's meant for barot, then you can't be somech. But there's a machloket if it wasn't a field that needed borot, and Abai then would say somech, and Rav would say eno somech. I'm not going to get into all the reasons now. You can look on the sheet if you want to review. The second lashon is that everyone agrees that sadeh ain asuya leborot, you can be somech. And the machloket is in a case which asuya leborot. And then Abai says somech, and Rav says eno somech. Okay, because what would Abai say? This is the important one in this case. What would he say? You can be somech because the board doesn't exist right now. Right? The board doesn't exist, and therefore it's okay. Now, we started with Tanan. Okay, we're going to start there again. It's about the middle of the page on Yud Zayin Amabet. Tanan, now we're going to quote our Mishnah. And as I said, we're going to start quoting various parts of our Mishnah to argue. Lo yachpor adam samuch leborosh al chaveiro. So in many of the cases, it's going to be the same structure. It says you can, in our Mishnah, be chofer a boor next to the boor of your friend. So what does that seem to imply? Tamadi kabor, hale kabor someh, right? It seems to imply if there wasn't a boor, you'd be allowed to be someh. Now, who does this work with? This works, so the first two questions, like I said, are on the lishonot. So it works, lahach lishna da'amar besadesh en asriya leborot yivraya kol someh. It works with the second lishon, because there's a case where both Abaye and Rava can explain the Mishnah, because they'll say, the Mishnah was a sadesh en asriya leborot. And that's why you're allowed to be someh, because you can assume the other guy's not going to dig a bore. And therefore, matnitim besadesh en asriya leborot, like we just said. Okay, ela lahach lishna, but the first lashon damar besadesh en asriya leborot pligi bishlam al Abaye. Abaye will say someh anyway, but lirava, there's no case where you can be someh. So lirava kashya. And the answer is, amar lecha Rava, ha'itmar ala, it was said about the Mishnah, amar Abaye v'tema Rabbi Yehuda, mi kotel borosh shaninu. Now, it's a little tricky. This whole line is this big machlok at Rashi Tosfot, exactly how to understand this line, both in the beginning, when we started on the beginning of Amud Aleph, and here, but I'll try to explain this kind of simply, that according to this, one way of reading this is, we wanted to make an inference from the Mishnah, that you can't be someh bor shel chavero, right, to your bor, to the friend's bor, meaning, if you didn't have a bor, you'd be allowed to be someh. And they say, no, that's not what we're learning for this Mishnah. What the Mishnah is coming to teach you is not that it's specifically if there's a bor. What the Mishnah is coming to teach you is how much space in general do you have to leave the bor. And basically, it's trying to teach you this law about a kotel of a bor. That one needs to leave a space of three tvachim, the three tvachim around the bor, whether you actually dug a wall, you created the wall yourself, or whether you just dug your pit. Three tvachim around is considered the walls of the pit. And therefore, again, this why exactly this doesn't question it, either it just means you can't imply this from the Mishnah, you can't do the derivation that we did, which is ha'i kabor, ha'le kabor, someh, okay? Or there's other ways to explain it, it's a little tricky, but, or you can say that, just trying to remember, or you can say that, right, it would apply across the board. Basically, mikota barosh shaninu means a bor always needs this. It doesn't matter. In other words, it's talking about a standard bor. Whether your friend has a bor next to it, doesn't have a bor, whether the bor exists, that's not what it's telling you. It's telling you that every bor has this three tvachim around. Okay? And that's their answer. Now, according to this now, we're going to basically flip this the other way, which is according to this, I'm just going to skip the next few lines because we're reviewing. I just want to get the main points here. The Ika de Amre now says, oh no, I'm not skipping actually, sorry. The Ika de Amre says, V'itmar ala, okay? The Ika de Amre says, no, we're starting with that limud of Abaye, right? Which is, Amar Abaye v'temar of Yudam v'kotel barosh shaninu on our Mishnah. And then, what's going to be the problem? According to this, what are we learning? That a boor always needs three tvachim. Well, who's that going to be difficult for? Abaye, who said you can be someh, right? Now, it's only going to be difficult to Abaye in which Lashon? In the second Lashon, because in the first Lashon, everyone agrees that Sadesh Asuya Leborot Eino Someh. So we could easily say the Mishnah was talking about a Sadesh Asuya Leborot, according to the first Lashon, and that's why you can't put it right next to it. But according to the second Lashon, okay, so let's read it inside. According to the second Lashon, Abaye always says Someh, in which case, how do you explain that he said Mikoto Barosh Aninu, which sounds like you always need three Tvachim around it. So, Ela Lahach Lishnat Amar Besadesu Yal Barot Pligi Bishlam Ala Rav Anicha Ela Labaye Kashrim. So, Amar Lacha Abaye Matnitin Shabalach Por Bevatachat. So, what's he going to explain? According to that Lashon, where he thinks you can always be Someh, what is he going to say? You can always be someh so long as, right, remember what Abaye was talking about, so long as there's no bor on the other side. But if there is a bor, or if they both came to dig at the same time, then what are we going to say? If they both came to dig at the same time, you already, it's one thing to say, do you have to anticipate future what might happen? The guy might decide to dig a bor. That's one thing. But, and there Abaye says, you definitely don't have to worry about that. But if already the person started, is about to start digging, and you know he's going to dig a bore, then even Abaye agrees that you have to larchik at that small. Okay, that's the answer here. I think I explained that not so right yesterday, although I'm not sure. Okay, then we have, so that was questions on the two lishonot. Each one we answered up. Now we're going to have a question on Abaye, and then like I said, we're going to switch all over to Rav. So then we had this question that this, I think we explained fine, which is Selah Habavi Adayim, right? If there's the softer stuff, Zechofer Baro Mikan, Zechofer Baro Mikan, Zemrachik Shloshat Fachim Vesabasi, Zemrachik Shloshat Fachim Vesabasi. So what do we assume here? Here it says, you have to, right, if you have to be Marchik Shloshat Tvachim. So what are the answer? Babi Adayim Shane, right? In other words, it's different because this is soft and therefore it's going to, you're going to definitely need to distance because it's going to ruin the ground on the other side. So then they say, Karele Ma Karele, what did they think at the beginning? They thought, maybe it's applying across the board. But Babi Adayim was specifically said because Itzri Chaleh Salkadat Tachamina, Kevant Babi Adayim, Libai Nami Rabcha Tvei. You might have thought you needed even more than three Tvachim, Kamash Malan, that you don't. Okay, now we're going to start with our slew of questions on Rav. Tashma. The gist of most of these is going to be pretty much the same. If you follow on the chart, you can see the questions 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, and 8 all have the same kind of structure to the answers. Okay, it's all the same structure, which is, here it says you have to distance it from something specific, which sounds like it's always going to be when that something specific is there, right? And therefore, if there's nothing specific, there's nothing on the other side, what are we going to assume? Then, you know, right, you can put it right, you can be somech. And what does Rava say? This has nothing to do with the Lishonot at all. What does Rava say? Rava says, eino somech, right? Rava says, even if the item doesn't exist on the other side, you still can't put it up against, you have to leave the separation. So each source we're going to say, this says specifically you have to separate X from Y, which means that when Y doesn't exist, you don't need to distance it yourself, you're allowed to put it up against. So each time we're going to say, no, the reason they said X, specifically Y, was to teach you something about the relationship between X and Y or something specific about Y, and that's why. But it doesn't mean that you can infer, this is all right, it doesn't mean you can infer that if Y, it's like a mathematical equation. If there's no Y, right, then the conclusion is the opposite, right? Okay? In other words, X to Y ain't no somech, which would mean if Y is not there, then somech. That's the equation the Gemara is going to each time make, and then they're going to reject it each time and say, no, there's no reason to infer this. Y is existing to teach you something different. Okay? That's going to be the majority of the questions, of the answers. Sometimes, once there's an answer, the Gemara is going to question it based on the continuation of that Mishnah or based on a brighter that was describing that Mishnah, which seems to indicate that that's not really the case. So sometimes there'll be a little bit of a question, but that's the basic structure. Tashma. Marchikim et hagefet. It's very helpful, by the way, if you use the chart. Those learning online also pays to print out the chart and use it alongside. Tashma. Marchikim et hagefet ve'et hazevel ve'et hamelach ve'et hasiv ve'et hasla'im mikot lo. Here's the key word. Right, you have to distance all these things. Remember, these things for the most part create heat from the kotel of your friend. Shloshat tvachim, osa besid, or remember visa besid, depending on what your nusach is. Again, what's the important part here? Tama deika kotel, right? It says specifically from the kotel of your friend, which would imply haleika kotel somech. If there's no wall there, you can be somech. And then the Gemara answers, lo, that's not what we can infer from here. Ki leika kotel nami lo somech. Even if there is no kotel and you want to put your melach, your seed, your sla'im, your gefet, your zevah, you still can't put it near the boundary of your friend, even if he doesn't have a wall. Ella, the Ella Maikamashmalan, so why does it tell us specifically a wall, right? It should say, just distance it from your neighbor's boundary. So what are the answer? Hakamashmalan, dahane kashu lakotel. They want to tell you that these specific materials are difficult for walls, meaning they ruin walls specifically. And therefore, if there's a potential, since you have a boundary here, the border, the person might put up a wall, therefore you have to distance all these items from the wall, even if the wall doesn't exist. Because these are items that mess up walls. Okay? That's what the Gemara is saying. Next to that, there we resolve that one. Next one. Tashma. Marchikim et hazra'im ve'et hamachresha ve'et me'a raglayim min hakotel shlosha tvachim. So again, we have to distance, right, planting the machresha, the plowshare, and urinating from a wall, shloshat tvachim. Again, what does it seem to imply? From the wall, tama diika kotel, haleka kotel samich. If there's no wall, then you can put it next. I'm just going to repeat this again, remember. And Rava says, you don't need to be, you're not allowed to be somech. So here it seems to, right, if the wall doesn't exist, you still can't be so mad because you have to anticipate possible future damage. And here it seems to imply, no, if the wall doesn't exist, you're allowed to put it right alongside the border. So what do they answer? Lo, kileka kotel nami lo samich. Again, this would match Rava. Even if there's no wall, you still can't put it up against. Elamai kamashlan, what's it coming to teach you? Ha kamashlan, dimituntah kashele kotel. This is coming to teach you that things that have moisture in them are bad for walls. Okay, again, it's trying to tell you, remember I said in the very beginning that the Gemara is going to give a bunch of reasons as to why these things are problematic. Either it's the moisture, it's the substance, you know, the heat, okay, different things. We're going to see all the different things here. So they say moisture is bad for a wall, and that's what it's coming to tell you. Next section of the Mishnah, Tashma. Ve'et harechaim gimel min ha-shechef shem dalet min ha-rechef. So right then it says, right, you have to separate the millstone, right? Three from the upper part and four from the bottom part. Three from the bottom part and four from the upper part. Right? Remember, the shechev is what it leans on, it rests on. So that's the bottom piece. And four from the rechev, which is the narrower top part. Tama di kakotel. Again, now, this is interesting. It actually doesn't say the other side's object here. But the assumption is that it goes with our mission. Just like all the other ones said kotel, this also means you have to separate it from the kotel. So tama di ika kotel haleka kotel samich. What is the right answer? Lo, ki leka kotel nami lo samich. Bela mai kamashwan. What's coming to teach you? Ha kamashwan di tiria kashel kotel. The shaking movement of the millstone is going to be difficult for walls, and therefore it's coming to tell you wall. But it doesn't mean the wall actually has to be there. It's just telling you in case the person ever wanted to build a wall, you can't put your thing next to it. Tashma. Next one. Ve'eta tanur. This is the end of our Mishnah. Shlosha min akilya shehem dalet min asafa. Remember the rim and the base and all the different options of the belly of it and the base. Okay, shehem dalet min asafa. Tama de'ika kotel. Right, again, this also, the assumption is you're talking about separating it from a wall. Ha'leka kotel samich. Right, you can imagine where this is going now. Lo ki leka kotel nami lo samich. Ve'elamai, right? Also, even if the wall wasn't there. So what's it, Elamai Kamashmalan? What's it coming to teach you? Ha Kamashmalan Dehavla Kashel Kotel. It's teaching you that heat is bad for walls. Okay? Tough. Now, so that was easy because we knew our Mishnah. The structure is exactly the same. Okay, now we're moving on to some new Mishnayot. Further on in the parak. Tashma. Next one. Lo Yiftach. Okay, we're up to question number five on Rav. Lo yiftach adam chanut shel nachtomim v'shel tzabain tachat otzaro shel chavero v'lo refet bakar. Okay, we'll see this mishnah further on, but you're not allowed to build a bakery, okay, a dyeing factory, or even a refet bakar, okay, underneath the wine cellar. That's what the Mepharshim explained in Otsaro, or at least some of them say, right? The truth is, right, Rashi says, Aliyasha Otsarim Batfu'a V'shemim V'yayin. Okay, any kind of storage house that your friend has, let's say you have a bayit and an aliyah, okay, we've learned that, right? The houses were two stories in general. Somebody has a storage house on top, right? It's a little strange to say it's yayin because people generally store wine underground. But let's say a storage house of something up above, you're not allowed to build one of these things underneath. Why? Because the assumption is the heat will destroy it of the nachtom. I assume also with the dyeing, it also is you heat, you boil up, right? There's a lot of heat going on. And the refet, what's the issue?
Smells.
The smell, okay? Tama, right, and I assume in a storage house, right, it'll make the food all smelly. Tama de'ika otzar. Now, what does it seem to imply? You can't put this, right? This stuff might damage, but what will it damage? If there's an otzar upstairs. But what's the obvious inference? Haleka otzar, but if not, avid, right? You're allowed to build downstairs whatever you want, even if there's an aliyah up top, and maybe one day the person will want to use it for a storage house. It sounds like you're allowed to. You don't have to worry about future damage. So here the answer is a little different. Dirashani. They say this is a unique halacha because it's talking about living space. And living space is not the same as what we were talking about until now, which was outdoor field space. What is it? Why is living space different? Because in living space, right, again, what's the assumption here? If nothing existed above, you could do whatever you wanted. Why is that? Because in living space, we allow you, this is very interesting, more flexibility than in outdoor space. Because that's your living space. You should be allowed to do whatever you want within your living space. Okay? This is, by the way, I'm sure it's true also when you go to get Isharim, you know, for building, right? A building permit. They'll allow you more flexibility within your house, right? You don't even have to tell them so many things you're doing in your house. It's mostly a pergola. You're going to need a special thing about, you know, to approve. Again, a pergola, you know, for example, you have to have a certain distance from your neighbor because, again, we don't want you sitting and talking and hanging out right on top of their property. So you have to distance it a certain amount of distance. Or I don't know if that's exactly true, but I know your neighbor can complain and say, I don't want it here. You know, there's all sorts of things that your neighbor has to sign on. Right. It could block their sunlight. There's all sorts of issues. So outdoor space is different than indoor space. Indoor space, you have a lot more flexibility, and that's why. So this is unique to living space. And now they say, Daikanami Ditane Alai. We can even prove this further because it says, there's a braita about this Mishnah that says, Im haita refet bakar kodemet lootsar mutar. It specifically says this halacha there, meaning that there's a braita on this issue, but not on all the other issues, which shows that this is different from everything else. And the braita there says that if, exactly our halacha that we're trying to prove, that if the refet bakar came first, then it would be allowed, right? That's our case that Bai and Rav are arguing about. It's, if you built the refet before the guy had his otsar there, it would be allowed, which shows what? Since it doesn't have a braita, remember, you have to remember the chronology. Everything we're looking at are Tanaitic sources, which are preceded Rav and Abaye by a number of generations. Now, Rav and Abaye are having this machloket later, and they don't know what the Tanaim say about it, because the Tanaim didn't say anything about it. But they did specifically say it about this one case that shows that this case is unique and it's different from everything else. And that must be because, what other reason other than it's a dira? What's interesting is this proof doesn't prove that it's because it's a dira, because it's a house. But it proves that this is different, and then the only thing that must be different about this than all the other cases is it's an indoor house space. Okay, next one. Tashma, next Mishnah. Okay, they're not exactly in order, but we're going through many of the Mishnayot that are, I think they're all in this parak, I believe. Lo yita adam ilan samuch l'sadeh, elem ken erchik mimenu arba amot. You can't put your tree next to a field unless you distance yourself 4 amot. V'tane ala, okay, we haven't gotten to the main point yet. There's a braita on this that says, Dalad amot sha'amru k'dei avodat ha'kerem. The reason they said dalad amot is, right, you can't plant your tree next to the field because we have to allow, okay, space for the person to work their field. Okay, so you have to allow space for the person to be able to get through to work his field. So, halav mishum k'dei avodat ha'kerem samich. But it sounds like if he didn't need the space to work, because let's say there wasn't a field growing there yet, you know, he hadn't grown anything, planted anything, you'd be allowed to. Va'af agav di'ika shorashim demazkei. And even though, right, there are shorashim that can damage. That's why don't you say, look out for future potential damage that the shorashim might damage. They're not worried about the shorashim damaging. So what do you see here? Sounds like, were it not for the k'dei avodat ha'kerem, you'd be able to be somech. How could Rava say no somech? Right? You have to worry about, you know, Rava says you have to worry about future damage, and here it seems like we're not worried about that. Why aren't they worried about shorashim? Like, Rava would be, the concept here is that Rava would be concerned that your shorashim will get over there and damage it, would say you have to distance it. So what do we answer? Hacha b'mayaskinan demafsik tsunma. It's talking about a case where the ground underneath is rock, which means that the shorashim will never get across. The shorashim will never get... So there is no future damage in this case. The only issue is k'dei avodat ha'kerem. There's no concern that your tree roots are going to get underneath because it's a case where there's rock in between the two fields under the ground. Daikanami dekatane. Okay, some people say this, some people don't, but we'll read it like this. Daikanami dekatane. You can further prove this because it says, it continues in the Mishnah, and it says, Hayah gader bentayim. If there was a fence in between the two properties, zeh somech l'gader mikan v'zeh somech l'gader mikan. Okay? You can put your tree right up against the wall. Why is that? First of all, you don't have to worry about k'dei avodat ha'kerem, right? What about the shorashim? Right, the shorashim, just because you have a fence, the shorashim can get there. So therefore, it must be that there was rock in between, that we're not... It must be a case where we were worried about the shorashim. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. So now they say, wait a minute. But look at the continuation there. If you're, let's say, okay, we live on two opposite sides of a fence. My shorashim go over to your side. Okay, they start going over, and you want to thresh there, and the shorashim are in your way. So you're allowed to uproot some of my shorashim, right? Even though, in theory, these shorashim belong to my tree, you're allowed to dig down three tvachim and uproot whatever shorashim are there, so that lo yakeva machresha, so that it won't prevent me from plowing properly. So now, if this is the continuation of that Mishnah, obviously, what are we going to say here? There is no rock in between. How could there possibly be rock in between if my shorashim are getting over there? So everything we've said now is kind of up in the air. What are the shorashim doing there if there's rock in between? So now they say, hachi kamar. This last line is a new case. In other words, case one and case two are where there's rock in between. Case three comes to say, and by the way, if there wasn't rock in between and the shorashim went over to the other side, then the other guy can uproot them up to a depth of three, down to a depth of three tefachim. Okay, and therefore it's not a question. New source. So we've answered the question on Rava. There we kind of had for the proof, we questioned it then, but then we answered up the question and we're okay. Tashma, marchikim et ha'ilam in abor 25 amah. By the way, we're going to have a slew of questions on Rava. Every one of them is going to have an answer. This next Mishnah. You have to separate the ilan from abor 25 amah. Okay, remember the source? We saw this. By the way, we're already on the second side. Okay, so marchikim et ha'ilam in abor 25 amah. Again, Tama di kabur. Now we're back to the basic structure. We got off the main structure for a little bit. Now we're back to the basic simple structure. The reason is because there's a bor. Hale kabur, what's the inference? If there wasn't a bor, samich, right? You'd be allowed to. By the way, this is a perfect daf. We're gonna end exactly at the end of the sugya. Okay, so that this is gonna take up the whole day. So then they answered, lo, ki le kabor nami lo samich, even if there wasn't a bor nami lo samich, same thing as before, right? You still wouldn't be allowed to. So why does it say specifically, marchikim et ha'ilam en abor, v'hakamashmalan de'ad 25 amah, az le shorashim u'mazke lebor. Now it's trying to teach you the distance needed between an ilan and a bor. If you didn't say bor, what would you have thought, right? Ilan, and you wouldn't have known ilan and what? This is trying to tell you that the relationship between an ilan and a bor is that the need is 25 amah, okay, which is obviously much greater than all the other shearing we saw. So ad kafe amah, right? The shorashim can go that distance and mazke lebor. So now they're going to question this. Ihachi ema seifa, but wait a minute. This continuation there says v'im ilan kadam lo yakutz. But if the ilan was there before the bor existed, then he doesn't have to cut down the ilan. Now, wait a minute. What did they say now? V'i delo samich, if you're not allowed to put your ilan, what does Rava say? You can't plant a tree within 25 amot of a spot where your friend could potentially dig a bor. But now it tells you, but if you put your ilan there before the bor existed, then you don't have to get rid of it, no problem. But wait a minute, right? If Rava says you can't be somech, meaning you can't put your tree down because maybe your friend will potentially want to dig a bor, then how could the tree possibly be there? Right? It doesn't make any sense. So they have to find a case now where it basically means if this was done by Isur, right? So why do we say to them you don't have to cut down your tree? Obviously you have to cut down your tree if you did it against the law. So now they're going to say we have to find a case where you could have planted the tree in a way that was mutar, and yet this situation exists. How could that be? Okay, Rav Papa actually says this somewhere else. We'll see where in a minute. Bilokech. Hachanami bilokech. We're going to take Rav Papa's answer in a different case and say, that must be the same case here. What does that mean? It means that the whole field belonged to me, including the spot where the guy wants to dig his bor. Then what happened? Then I planted my tree. Then I sold part of my property to somebody else. Now he wants to put up a bor in that part of his property, which is now his. But my ilan is now in the way. But that's not my fault. I planted my tree, beheter, and that must be the case they're talking about. Okay, and that's why we can say, in that case, I don't have to uproot my tree because I did it all legit. Okay, next source. Marchikim et ha'mishra min ha'yerek. These are three things that have a particular relationship of damage between them. Okay, what is this? A mishra is where you're soaking the flax. There's a lot of water and moisture. You have to distance that from a yerek. Okay, certain types of foods, Rashi says, like kruv, cabbage, shumim, garlics, and krishim leeks. The assumption is that the mishra, the soaking of the flax, affects negatively these things. Ve'et ha-krishin min ha-psalim, okay, the leeks you have to separate from the onions. Ve'et ha-chardal min ha-dvorim, the chardal, the mustard seed, has to be separated from the bees. Okay, there's an assumption that all these things have a negative effect of the first one on the second one. Okay? So now, what are they going to again infer? Tama di ka yerek, kale ka yerek samik, right? It's just because the yerek is existing. It doesn't mean I can't put my stuff to soak in the flat, my flax seeds to soak next to some area that maybe you'll plant these types of vegetables. No, it's only if those types of vegetables are there. So again, right? So then what do they answer? Lo, ki le ka yerek nami lo samich, again, right? Even if there's no vegetable there, even if there's no garlic or cabbage or whatever there, you still can't put it there. So then why is it telling you specifically if there's a yerek? Because hakamashman, dahane kashu ahadade. They're just trying to tell you this relation, right? This item is bad for that other item. So therefore, if your friend might potentially plant cabbage there, you can't put your stuff to soak. Okay, you have to distance it so that it doesn't negatively affect him, and therefore it specifically gives you each item because it wants to tell you which thing affects negatively the other. Okay, so now, this is the last one, by the way, so we should in theory finish here, but we're going to have a whole long slew of questions on this. Okay, so the first question I kind of put in, okay, into the box, and then the rest, because it was just too long and I wanted it to look better, I kind of put it outside the box. But now they're going to say like this. But really, it kind of, in theory, belongs in the box because it's just a back and forth all about this answer. So what do they say? First thing, ihati emaseifa. But now there's a unique thing that appears in this Mishnah that doesn't appear in any other Mishnah. What is that? The end of this Mishnah, it says, Rabbi Yossi Matir B'chardal. By the way, I brought you right under the chart. I brought you the whole source just so you could see it in its entirety. Okay, so the Mishnah says like this. But Rabbi Yossi is matir specifically in the chardal case. This is obviously going to cause us to wonder, why specifically chardal? What's unique about that case? Okay, so now, according to this, Rabbi Yossi matir b'chardal, mipnei sheyachol lomar lo, ad sheata emor li harchek chardalcha min dvorai, harchek dvorcha min chardalai, sheba'ot v'ochlot ligluge chardalai. Rabbi Yossi says, just, I want to check one thing. What?
It's a tongue twister.
Yes, it is. Okay, here. I was thinking, it doesn't appear in the Mishnah there, but it makes it seem like it appears in the Mishnah there. If you look in the Ot Yud-Bet, it tells you in the Masoret HaShas, it says, Vitane Allah, and there's a braita on that thing of Rabbi Yossi that says this, that explains his answer. So again, our question is going to come from this braita. The chardal, I can put my chardal next to his dvorim, why? Because it's a dual, I specifically said the mishra is bad for the yerek. It's not like the yerek is bad for the mishra. But in this case, the chardal is bad for the dvorim, and the dvorim are bad for the chardal. Because the dvorim can eat the chardal seeds. And the chardal is bad, I forget why the chardal is bad for the dvorim. Rashi says, shochlim et ha-chardal, right. They eat the chardal umechaded et pihem, ve'ochlot et ha-dvash shalahem. It makes their mouths, right, they end up, I guess, eating their own honey or something. So the honey owner, right, the bee owner says it's going to cause the, right, what happens if you, this is so funny, it's like a whole honey and mustard thing, right? We put honey and mustard together. But what are they saying? If the bees eat the honey, eat the mustard, they're going to need the honey to counteract it, which means that the owner of the honey is going to say, hey, you're ruining my honey. If you... And the mustard seed guy is going to say, hey, but it's eating my mustard seed. Okay, so that's what it's saying, right? If you're going to tell me, right, move your chardal from my dvorim, I can tell you, right? You separate your dvorim from my chardalai because they're ba'od and ochlot, the stuff from my mustard. Okay, now. Now, what's the relationship? We didn't get to the question yet.
Rabbi Yossi matir because
he allows it because it's a dual relationship.
Because
it's bad for both sides. So he says, you know, you can do it because the guy has no claim on you to say don't put your thing here because you could claim, well, it's bad for me too. Now, obviously, according to his logic, no one, you would never want to do that in the first place. But the point is, the other guy has no claim on you. because the loss is going to be equal. Now, whether that's it's a good question, right? They're still going to each lose. But we're going to see. You'll see he'll talk about it a little bit more. He'll explain it better. Okay? V'i de'lo samich. Now, according to this, right, if you're not allowed to be somech, if you're not allowed to put it there because you're concerned what might happen down the road, so hechi mishkachala, right? How could this ever be a case where this would happen? So amar papa bilokach. Again, we must be talking about a case of a lokach, where I have my dvorim, let's say, right? And then I sold you my field and then you planted chardal. Okay? So now they say, this is, by the way, the case where Rav Papa said it. I just want to check one thing. According to this, 1 second. Right, this is really asking that question that we just asked before, which is if Rabbi Yossi thinks that they're each going to potentially damage each other, right, even if the relationship is dual, how could you ever, it's like you said, which is, how could you ever get to this situation? Because you're not allowed to put something, right, if it might cause damage down the road. And again, according to Rava's understanding, that ain't no somech, how could this have ever come up, that you have Dvorim and Chardal next to each other? So the answer is, again, and this is the place where Rav Papa said it, and they said, let's learn about that case too. It's bilokach. It's a case where I have my Dvorim or my Chardal, right, and then I sold it to somebody else, and then that's basically what happened, right? And that's how they ended up next to each other.
So it's part of the property, so that the distance was necessary.
Right, the distance wasn't an issue because I wasn't planning to plant Chardal right next to my Dvorim. Then I sold you part of my property, and now you want to do that, and that's how we're going to end up with a problem. So now they say, Ibilokeach, if that's the case, so my time under Rabbanan. So now we have to explain Rabbanan. Why do Rabbanan say you can't do this? If it was all done beheter, right, I planted this note, right, without having the other guy on the other side, so what's the problem? And my time under Ve'od, and the second question is, my time under Rabbi Yossi, why does Rabbi Yossi only matir b'chardal? Afilu mishra b'yar kanami. We should allow the Mishra and the Yarka also. Why specifically does he say Chardal, but not all the others? Because in theory, what we're basically saying is, it sounds like if it's all Belokech, the reason is you did this Beheter, and therefore you didn't distance it. You don't have to worry, right? There's no issue there. So basically, if I have, right, let's just remember the direction because it goes in both directions. It was Marchikim et HaChardal min HaDvorim. So basically, I planted chardal, right? Then I sold you this part of the field, right? I sell you this area, and you put dvorim. Now, you have no claim on me because you put your dvorim after my chardal already existed. Okay, so why? So number one, why do Rabbanan say this is usur if I planted my chardal beheter? And why does Rabbi Yossi say that this only works with Dvorim and Chardal when in theory it should be the same with the Mishra? If I started with my Mishra and then I sold you this part of the property and then you wanted to put your Yerek here, that's not my problem. Why should I have any issue?
But the Chardal is different.
Ah, so that's what we're going to say. But right now, according to the theory we're saying, which is it's all Belokeach, according to Rav Papa, it shouldn't be a problem according to anybody in any of these cases, because as long as I put it there before, right, when the whole field belonged to me, I planted in the center of my field, right? That was for sure mutar. Now that you bought the adjacent area and you want to plant something that you're going to claim my stuff is damaging yours, what right do you have to go tell me I have to get rid of my mishra, my chardal, whatever it might be? So that's the questions now. So I'm a Ravina. Kasavre Rabbanan ala mazik laharchik et atzmo. Okay, so now we're going to say, because Rabbanan holds that I have to prevent myself from my stuff causing you damage. So even if I sold you the area later, if right now my chardal is going to potentially cause damage to your dvorim, or my mishra is going to cause potential damage to your yerek, you're responsible. I'm responsible to prevent any damage, right? Just because it didn't, I planted it beheter, or I put it there, my mishra, or whatever it might be, doesn't mean that I don't have to worry that now I have to be concerned for future damage. That's Rabbana. So now they say, wait a minute. According to this, michlal, now this is what we assume, but we're going to question this. Michlal, if Rabbanan hold that, then what are we going to assume Rabbi Yossi? Always remember, we're going to back to this basic machloka between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbanan. Michlal to Rabbi Yossi sevar al hanizak l'archik et atzmo, right? Obviously, then what's Rabbi Yossi's shita. I can do whatever the heck I want. If my chardal, my kozam, it's your dvorim. My mishra, my kozam, it's your. So don't plant your yaret there. Don't put your dvorim there. That's your problem. You need to prevent yourself from having any potential future damage from my stuff. If we say that, so then what's going to be the problem with Rabbi Yossi? Afilu mishravi yar kanami. Remember, Rabbi Yossi only says it about the chardal and dvorim case, which means that that can't be his logic. So right now they're going to reject, even though we know that this is the case, they're going to reject the fact that Rabbi Yossi holds on izak laharchiket atzmo. And they're going to think for a minute till they reject it, that ela laolam Rabbi Yossi nami ala mazik sfirale. He also thinks the responsibility is on the mazik. V'hachi ka'amar lehu Rabbi Yossi l'rabbanan. And this is what Rabbi Yossi would say to Rabbanan. Tinach mishra v'yarka dahane mazke. Hane. Hani lomas kehane, right? In other words, now we're going to say exactly what Ani said, which is there's a difference between these cases. Remember, we're going to reject this reasoning, but this is what they're thinking right now. Really, the mazik, it's his responsibility to prevent himself from damaging the other. However, so in the Mishran, the Yarka case, he's going to agree, right? That he's not matir in those cases. Why is he not matir? Because the mazik might cause damage to the nizak. The Mishra will cause damage to the Yerek, etc. He has to be responsible. But the Yerek guy, right? It doesn't. It's not a relationship where each one might damage the other. El chardalu dvarim travayhu mazke ahadade, right? Each one damages the other. V'rabanan. So what's Rabbanan's shita then? Dvarim lechardal lo mazke la'av. What do they say? Dvarim don't damage chardal. Why not? Ibebinta lo mishkachale. Ibetarfa hadar pe'ere. If we're talking about the seeds, that they're eating the mustard seeds, they're so small that they can't even see them. They can't find the mustard seeds. And if you're talking about the leaves of the mustard that they're eating, that they'll grow back the leaves. So therefore, they're not actually damaging the guy. So therefore, they claim that the dvorim might eat the leaves. They don't find the seeds. They might eat the leaves. That will damage the dvorim, but it won't damage the chardal guy because the leaves will grow back. There's no actual damage. And that's what Rabbanan say. It's only a one-direction damage here. And therefore, it's just like the Mishra and the Yerek. Okay, this is all according to the Shita that Rabbi Yossi holds ala mazik, right? But then they say, wait a minute. V'savar Rabbi Yossi ala mazik la'archiket atzmo v'hatnan. How could you say that's what Rabbi Yossi holds? We know specifically, he says in a Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi omer, af al pi shabor kodemet li'ilan, lo yakutz. Even if you dug your bore before the ilan existed, you still don't have to cut down the ilan. Why? Everybody has rights to be in their own property. You shouldn't have stuck your boar there if you knew that the guy had a tree there. So basically, you don't have to worry about potential damage you're causing to the other. So therefore, this logic didn't work. And lelo olam, Rabbi Yossi ala nizak sfirale. Clearly, Rabbi Yossi holds it's the nizak who has to distance himself. So then, how did Rabbi Yossi matir only b'chardal? Now we're going to have a different type of answer. Rabbi Yossi, l'divrei ha'derabanan ka'amar lehu, he was only talking, when it said Rabbi Yossi matir b'chardal, he was saying, chachamim, according to your logic, you should also matir b'chardal. In other words, he says, I think all these things are allowed. However, I think that even you would agree with me about the chardal and dvorim case. Why? Again, because they're a unique case. So, l'divram d'rabanan kamadu. L'didi, for me, ala nizak l'archiket atzmo. V'afilu mishra v'yarka lo bai richuke. Right? I don't even think you need to distance your mishra or your yarek. Okay? So, we're basically understanding the Mishnah when it says Rabbi Yossi matir. He's only saying he's matir aliva d'rabanan. But to him, right, he's matir the chardal even according to Rabbanan. But for himself, he's matir all those cases. Okay? Ela l'didchu d'amaritu ala mazik. But according to you, who you think the mazik needs to, tinach mishra v'yarka dahane maskehane, right? Those damage those, meaning the mishra damages the yarek, but hane lo maskehane, but the yarek doesn't damage the mishra. And likewise with the next case. But ela chardalu dvarim travayhu maske ahadade, each of them damage each other. V'rabanan, but why don't Rabbanan disagree? Because in the Mishnah, there's clearly the machlok of Rabbi Yossi Rabbanan about it. And as Rabbi Yossi saying, Rabbanan, l'shitatchem, this is what you should say. But they don't agree with him. Why not? Because dvorim l'chardal lo mazkele, right? Rabbanan hold, exactly like we suggested earlier, that dvorim don't damage the chardal. Again, the same reason. Ibebinta, if we're talking about the seed, it's so small, and therefore lomish kachala, they're not going to find it. And ibetarfa hadar peiri, right? And if we're talking about the leaves, it will regrow. Okay, and therefore, we basically answered up how it could be that Rabbi Yossi's matir only b'chardal, because he's not really. He's really matir in all of them. And, okay, so again, just to review, we had all these questions for the most part, right? We won't review the whole thing, but against Rava, all these cases that seem to imply if the item didn't exist, you should be allowed to be someh. And in all of them, we basically say no. Even if the item isn't there, the other item, you still have to distance yourself to prevent potential future damage. And each time we came up with a different excuse as to why it specifically said the item, right? To teach you the unique halachot between those two items and the relationship between those two items, that damages that and that damages that. Okay? Tough.